Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast brought to you by Kane's Tire in San Rafael. Kane's Tire has always had the lowest prices in Marin for 54 years. Today's guest is John Lazor, the play-by-play announcer for the Richmond Flying Squirrels, the Giants' AA affiliate in the Eastern League. John, the Richmond Flying Squirrels got off to such a rough start, and now they're playing a lot better baseball. But before we even get to talking about the team, let's talk about Matt Cain and what he did the other night. First of all, the performance. What did you think of what you saw from him? The Giants wanted to get him out there, throw his 50 pitchers or so. So did he accomplish what he wanted?
Yeah, he did. He actually threw right on the number, Joe. And first of all, great to be with you. The Giants wanted him to throw 55 pitches, and that's the exact number that he hit. And as we discussed in our broadcast going in, it was a pretty clear message of what San Francisco wanted to see from Matt Cain that night. And that was essentially just getting back on the mound and feeling comfortable in his mechanics and in his delivery. And I think we definitely saw that from Matt as he worked into the fourth inning. I don't think he had some of the command that he's noted for, maybe even the movement as well, but the velocity was there, and that was important for him. And most importantly, coming out of it, he said he felt very comfortable and was able to pass that mental hurdle that, of course, pitchers will always discuss coming off an injury of that magnitude.
It's always fun when you have a rehab assignment in the minor leagues. What was the atmosphere like for the fans to get to see a World Series champ, a guy who's thrown a perfect game in his career, you know, one of the better pitchers on the Giants staff?
Yeah, you're right. It is always special, regardless of whether you're a San Jose or a Fresno before in Sacramento now, where that happens on a somewhat regular occurrence. That's not the case for us because, of course, of our East Coast location. And that was just the second Major League Rehab pitcher we've had here. Ryan Vogelsong was here for two starts back in 2013. So our fans get really amped up about it, Joe. They really do. And the atmosphere was a big league atmosphere and very reverential, I think, would be the word to use when Matt came off the mound. There was a standing ovation. And I think our fans just really enjoy being that close to a guy that has accomplished the things that he has. And every year that we're here, of course, and that affiliation continues with San Francisco, I think we continue to breed more and more Giants fans and more fans that are following what San Francisco is doing closely. And that only adds to it.
Tell us what you know about the story of when Cain came out of the game, because up in New York, there was a no-hitter being thrown by Chris Heston, and it was pretty exciting for Giants fans to know about that. And then how about a teammate in Matt Cain wanting to know what was going on? I understand that he was watching the game on Mac Williamson's iPad in the clubhouse. So what do you know about that story?
Yeah, absolutely. Him and Mac Williamson are very tight, and that's how we found out in the first place that Matt Cain was coming here. I found out from Bobby Evans about 10 minutes after I found out from Mac Williamson, and of course they gained that closeness last year while Mac was rehabbing his own Tommy John surgery, and Matt was of course down there rehabbing his elbow. So yeah, that's absolutely true. There was a buzz going through the ballpark as Matt Cain left, like I just talked about, the standing ovation. And then about the same time, everybody started noticing where Heston was and his outing in New York, because it was somewhat mirroring the timeline. And that major league game was actually an inning or so behind ours. So as soon as Cain came out, he was being a great teammate as a squirrel that night, went back into the dugout, and then came back up. And he was trying to steal glances, I think, at Mac Williams' iPad in terms of where Heston was. And then he was delivering the report back to our double-A guys. So it was a pretty fantastic moment, man. And all things considered, Heston being one of my favorite guys that's ever come through here, and I'm sure the San Francisco fans are starting to figure that out about him. It was one of those magical moments and why we do this and go through the grind year to year.
We'll have more with double-A Richmond play-by-play announcer John Lazor right after this.
Hi, I'm Mark McElhone at Cain's Tire in San Rafael. If you want the lowest prices in Marin and the best service, call us at 453-2942. Cain's Tire, 1531 4th Street, where our prices beat Costco's prices every time.
It's great to see a guy like Heston who battled through the minor leagues. It's not like he just waltzed right into the major leagues. So did you think that he had that kind of mindset that he'd be able to survive it and get to this point where he is now?
You know, when he was here, the first half of his 2012 season at the AA level, it was almost a video game like ease for Heston. And I think you're seeing that confidence that we saw for the first couple of months of that year now at the major league level. Now, as you know, Joe, and everybody knows, that is a lot more difficult to obtain at that level than it sounds. And I think Chris needed that seasoning in AAA that he got. And he'll talk all the time about the mental transition that he had to make in trusting his stuff and allowing contact, and able to use the tail on that fastball, which we saw so effectively, of course, in that last start and really has become his calling card, and using that to his strength. So I'm not going to go ahead and say that 3 or 4 years ago, I knew that Chris Heston was going to have this tremendous run of success in his rookie season or that he would be there in a consistent role. But I will say the makeup of the young man, what he was able to do and the poise that he shows in those moments does not surprise me at all, because I've never seen him fluster, Joe, except for the times when we'd walk off the 18th green and I would have handed it to him.
Right, that's about the only time, okay? Since we mentioned Mack Williamson, there's another guy who seems kind of unflappable, and he's having a good year. I was looking at his numbers, hitting 300, not hitting a lot of home runs, but it looks like he's driving in runs, and I don't know, in that league, I don't know if it's conducive to hitting a ton of home runs. So tell us about Mack and what's going on with him.
Yeah, you know, I was just talking to Mac the other day when we were on our longest road trip of the season up to New England, and I said, you know, it's about time I recognize the start that you're off to, because you're right. This is not a league that's conducive to home runs. We play in the most pitcher-friendly ballpark in the league by leaps and bounds. This is an alleys ballpark, much like San Francisco's AT&T Park is. It's a place where you play for doubles and the lines. And there are some opportunities offensively on the road, but generally the weather doesn't lend itself to getting off to a strong start. And we saw Matt Duffy last year get off to a similar start average-wise to Mack Williamson. And he's done it a bit quietly, I think, because the focus was on the struggles that the team were having during that historic 15-game losing streak. And we came out on the other side, and I remember thinking, you know, Mack really survived that quite well. He was around 270, 280, and then not coincidentally when he started taking off, so did this team in the middle of the order. And now we've gotten to the point where we're a couple of months into the year, Joe, and you really have to look at it and say, wow, that's been an impressive start. Because even some of the guys that you see now as Giants regulars, your Belts, your Crawfords, your Panics, your Duffies, they didn't necessarily have the level of success from a productive standpoint that Mack has had. And it's been impressive to watch. And what I like about Mack is he has confidence. There's no doubt about that. He looks the part, but he's got humility too. I was just actually moments before we started chatting here down in the clubhouse. He got a new shipment of spikes from Under Armour. And I said, woo, nice kick you got there, Mack. And he said, yeah, make sure you highlight that on the broadcast tonight when I'm 0 for 4 with 3 strikeouts. So, you know, and he's a guy. Here's a guy who's hitting about 75 to 80% of his recent appearances. So, you know, that's always fun to interact with him on that level. And I think he's enjoying that success and honest about where he is developmentally, because I think the Giants have been pretty open in telling him that he's more than likely going to be here regardless of his level of success for the majority of the year.
Yeah, maybe someday he'll have an entire box of spikes just the way Tim Lincecum did it. Last time I interviewed him, he had I don't know how many spikes there. And he's saying, you know, yeah, maybe I've got a couple of shoes in here that'll give me a good start. I just thought, wow, that's nice to have that availability. You know, speaking of big leagues, you know, guys getting all those shoes compared to minor leagues, looking at what happened last year with Matt Duffy and even Jarrett Parker briefly going up, but especially Matt Duffy going up, making the most of his opportunity, and now he's the starting third baseman. Pretty incredible, because he didn't play in AAA. He went right from AA. What does that say about the organization now and maybe getting opportunities for some of these young guys where they can see maybe there is a fast track?
What I love about what it says about the Giants organization, Joe, is the fact that the Giants internally always considered Matt Duffy a prospect, but your publications like Baseball America and MILB.com didn't necessarily think he passed the eye test. And, you know, we're all guilty of that from a media perspective and a broadcasting perspective of, like I just said, Mack Williamson, he looks the part. You know what? Matt Duffy doesn't. He's a thin guy. But we had the opportunity to watch him, and you could quickly tell that he controls his bat through the zone and otherwise better than really anyone I've ever seen, maybe save for Joe Panic. And that allows him to have a level of consistency. So what he's done this year, yes, it's been a little bit surprising that he's been able to work back through the league the second and third time and continue to have that success without really ever struggling at that level. But what I like about the Giants is they tell players essentially without saying it that if you have that success, it doesn't necessarily matter if you were a first, second, third, fourth, fifth round guy, or Baseball America thinks you're one of our top five prospects. If we think you can help us at the big league level and there's a spot that we need to fill, you're going to come up and do that. And I think that's tremendous. And I think that's something that resonates with these guys down here, particularly the ones that may be flying a little under the radar. With Jarrett Parker, I really want to call him a joke because, of course, last year he got promoted straight from here along with Duffy to New York and to Citi Field and never got to appear. And I thought it a little bit coincidental that he's heading right back to Citi Field. So I actually texted him this morning and said, I hope you actually get to put the bat in your hands and swing it this time, my man.
More with John Lazor after this. Inside China Basin is sponsored by Angel Borelli, a nationally known expert on pitching mechanics from right here in the Bay Area. She works with some of the best pitchers in the Bay Area, troubleshooting and solving their performance issues. Listen to Angel Borelli's weekly podcast, The Fix, which discusses issues and solutions for pitchers from a sports science perspective. And get a weekly tip on pitching at Angel Borelli Pitching on Facebook. Check out our website, jimscience.com, where you can order her books and other publications. Contact Angel Borelli today. Speaking of guys who are not under the radar, some guys who really are a big focus, I think, of the Giants and even around Major League Baseball, looking at prospects, Kyle Crick and Tyler Beede. And both of these guys, there's a lot of expectations. Let's start with Crick, because I looked at his ERA being 1.88, but he's having a lot of troubles with walks. He's striking out about one per inning, but 32 walks in 38 and a third innings. That's got to be bothersome to him and the pitching coach.
Yeah, it is. It's been a really frustrating month for Kyle Crick, because after last year, and we had a similar conversation, Joe, about Kyle Crick, and the numbers were the same, because the bottom line is his fastball is so explosive that people don't hit it. You know, at the most, they foul it off and drive his pitch count up, and he never really gives up a whole lot of contact. But at the same time, he really has not developed any consistency with his control, let alone command, and he's not able to command that fastball, and therefore that doesn't allow him to get ahead in counts and showcase and develop his secondary stuff. So it's been a frustrating run for him. Now, at the outset of this year, you could definitely see that Kyle had rededicated himself to putting in the work, and he worked exceptionally hard in the offseason, and he came into this year and you saw progression start to start, culminating in a start in late May, or I should say late April, excuse me, in New Britain against the Rockies affiliate, where he sequenced guys. He set guys up. We saw the curveball that we didn't see at all last year. We saw the second breaking ball, the slider, and we saw a dominant changeup for the first time. And we walked away from the ballpark that night going, okay, there it is. And then unfortunately, he felt some discomfort in his wrist. And due to that, the Giants didn't want him to take the mound in his next start, because they didn't want him coming off of that strong performance to be less than 100% and cause that to be a setback. So he missed the start, didn't throw for 12 days. And when he's come back, unfortunately, he's really regressed back to the guy that he was all season last year, and that guy that's just out there throwing and clearly isn't comfortable in his feel for his mechanics and isn't able to repeat that delivery. So again, this year we've seen the top side for Kyle Crick, and that was certainly rejuvenating, but of late it's been a very frustrating run of about three or four starts where it's been a step or two back.
Well, the other pitcher that's really I think going to go places fast is Tyler Beede. He was drafted last year in the first round, and he's already made it up to Double A, and he had a stellar debut. Tell us about that. I mean, I thought maybe he'd spend the whole season in San Jose, but there he is in Double A, and he went 7 scoreless innings the first time.
Yeah, let me tell you, Joe, just from a personality standpoint, before I get to the on-field performance, I love this kid. And the Giants organization clearly knew what they were doing when they picked him, because he has the entire makeup that you look for, and it's sincere. It's without question not an act. So he's been a breath of fresh air in our clubhouse. And his Double-A debut was just a little bit less than spectacular. He came out and the adrenaline was coursing, you could see, and he was a bit up and he was a bit erratic in the first inning. Got into a bases-loaded jam, got a double play ball, did a fist pump that the guys were joking about with him. They're like, you can't fist pump in your first inning at a new level, my friend, particularly when you have the struggles that you did. But it settled him down, and you could see him kind of laughing in the dugout. And he came back out, and the rest of the sixth innings and that 7 scoreless innings appearance were absolutely dominant. He was in control. He was mixing his pitches. He was in command with all of that. And you can definitely see that he is well beyond, I think, where the Giants had even hoped that he would be, Joe. And that's emphasized by the point. We haven't seen San Francisco rush guys to this level, and certainly not to the big leagues. And I was amazed by the fact that that was just his 16th professional appearance and less than a calendar year from helping lead Vanderbilt to the College World Series.
Yeah, that's pretty fast. They have another first-rounder in that rotation, and Chris Stratton. Now, his numbers aren't as good, but have you seen progress from Stratton?
Yeah, we have, Joe. Actually, you know, he did make some significant strides, and he put together back-to-back starts. And for Stratton, it's all about elevation, because his stuff doesn't move nearly as much as Beede's, and it's not nearly as explosive. as Kyle Crix is. But what he relies on is that depth and that plane on his fastball. And when he's up, he gets hit just like anybody else. But when he's down, he can be in control. And he was over two starts, and the Giants, recognizing that he's a bit more advanced in an age due to the Mississippi State drafting and taking a few more years at the lower levels, they pushed the button on him. So he actually left us during our most recent road trip, and he is now up in Sacramento with the Rivercats, hoping to build upon that success, from which I understand his AAA debut went quite well.
Oh, okay, well, that's good to hear that he's moved up. What about Josh Osich with the 15 saves and the 1.61 ERA? Is he an arm that we should be looking at moving up quickly as well?
Yeah, without question. You know, it's funny that you asked that. I was just walking up to the press box here, and I ran into Osich, and I was talking to him, and I said, have the Giants contacted you at all about a timetable? And that was a rhetorical question because I knew they hadn't, but I wanted to spark the conversation with him because he has looked completely different this year. And of course, many people know the story of Osich. He's supposed to be a top five pick overall coming out of Oregon State, had the unfortunate Tommy John surgery, Giants snapped in the sixth round, and he really hasn't been able to stay healthy through the first number of years in his professional career. And we've seen that, you know, we've seen him at times look like that guy. And then, you know, a week or so later, he's down on the disabled list again. And we haven't seen that. He's been healthy this year. He developed a cutter in the offseason, that is really the pitch that has put things together for him, because his velocity has returned on his four-seam fastball. He's up in the mid-90s, and he has that devastating changeup, which has become his calling card. But he didn't have anything in the middle. He didn't have the breaking ball to get hitters off the scent of both of those pitches, and that would really allow him to labor. But that cutter has become that pitch. And I'll tell you, Joe, having watched the guys that have gone through now for 6 years and have success, he's ready.
And your team, they struggled early. The Flying Squirrels had a 15-game losing streak early in the season, but have played so much better since then. And the organization really has done a lot of winning with AA Richmond and AAA Sacramento. So how enjoyable is that for everybody? I know the Giants do stress that in the organization. They want to win, and that's happening right now.
Yeah, they want to win. And I think there's been a level of frustration from Shane Turner and some of the other developers. And the reality in this game is it is tremendously difficult to have success at the major league level, particularly to the level that the Giants have over the last 5 years, while also maintaining a successful win-loss record in the minor leagues. And quite frankly, that's because you're trading away a lot of your top-level talent to succeed immediately at the big league level. And there's been somewhat of a talent gap that we anticipated coming into the second half of last year and into this year. And we looked at the roster for the Squirrels, and I liked what the Giants did in terms of trying to piece it together a bit with some more veteran guys and give this offense some substance around Mack Williams. But it just didn't come to fruition in the first month. And we knew this team was better than what they were showcasing. But the Tyler Beattie's, like we talk about, rapidly ascending to this level, and some other guys. Randall Moreno has been a huge surprise. He just turned 23 the other day, came literally out of nowhere, Joe, to be one of the league leaders in offense, and he's really been the stabilizing force defensively in the middle of the infield. So there's been some surprises. There have been some things that I think the Giants did anticipate coming into this season that have started to come together. And I'll tell you, this team right now, which was woeful, to say the least, over the first 3-4 weeks of the season, is, in my opinion right now, the best team in this league.
Wow, that's an amazing turnaround, and that's great for you, because as a broadcaster, you definitely want to be with a team that's winning. It's always hard to be with that team that's like 25 games out of first place, because then you're trying to come up with stories every night and trying to figure out ways to entertain the listeners, right?
Yeah, well, we'll put it this way, Joe. I may or may not have put down a non-refundable deposit on a cruise in the first couple of weeks of September following the season back in April in some of my frustration, and I might be losing that money.
Well, John, hey, thanks a lot for the time. Appreciate it. Hopefully we'll catch up later on this season and see how things are going there in Richmond. Really like talking to you here on the podcast, and have a great year.
Joe, it's always my pleasure, man. I'm glad we can do it, and look forward to doing it again soon.
That's John Lazor, the play-by-play announcer for the Richmond Flying Squirrels, the Giants' AA affiliate in the Eastern League. Join us again Friday. We'll be at AT&T Park in San Francisco podcasting as the Giants take on the Arizona Diamondbacks. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.